probability is about, why you need
to quantize field and not only particles to do quantum physics, especially when doing relativistic quantum physics, which is needed for high energy physics, but also for consistency of the whole quantum formalism. And as far as I have seen, you have been discussing canonical quantization. So in lecture one, you have seen canonical quantization, especially for QED, quantum electrodynamics. And canonical quantization is a standard scheme to build a quantum theory out of the basic building blocks of a quantum theory, which are Hilbert space and operators to represent. So the vector in the Hilbert space represents the states of the system, and the operator acting on this Hilbert space represents the observable, what you can observe on your quantum system, on your quantum field. And so what I will be doing in this lecture are three different things. First, I will be discussing another way to quantize quantum fields, which is called path integral and functional integral quantization. And I think you, in the quantum theory course, you already had an introduction to what path integrals are and why, what they are useful for when studying non-relativistic quantum systems. And what I will be doing will be to extend those methods. There is, only one end in English. Those methods of path integral. So instead of integrating over the position of a particle, we will integrate over the configuration of a field in order to quantize the field. And this leads to what is called functional integral quantization. So you integrate over functions of fields instead of integrating over path histories. Okay. So it's a very important tool when doing quantization of field for various reasons. I hope to explain to you why it is useful. But one warning already. This is not a different quantum theory. It's another way to represent and to compute and to manipulate the basic quantity of a quantum field theory, which are the states and the observable. And so in some sense, canonical quantization using Hilbert space and path integrals are just different representation of the same quantum theory. And that's something very important you should keep in mind all along the lecture on quantum field theory. Quantum theory is a very rich, somewhat involved and complicated theory. It has some still mysterious or at least puzzling aspects. But on the other hand, quantum theory is a very consistent theory of the world. And it has different mathematical representation, which leads to different point of view on the theory and different way of how to compute quantities. For some kind of computation and study of some physical process, canonical quantization is very well suited, and path integral is very complicated, leads to complicated calculation. But for other phenomena, other calculation, path integrals is very, very convenient and leads very quickly to the correct results, why it's much more involved and complicated to use canonical quantization. So view, path integral and functional integrals and canonical quantization are just two aspects of quantum field theory, and keep that in mind. And I think you will discover later, for instance, in the lecture on the foundation of quantum theory, that in fact, there are also other representations of quantum theory, which sometimes are more useful to look at some aspects of quantum theory, but there are also some other representation of the same quantum theory. Okay, so this is the first part, and I hope I will do that during the first week. The second very important feature of quantum theory that I will discuss is renormalization theory. And renormalization group. So I don't know if you already had heard about what is renormalization and why you need renormalization when building a quantum field theory. I don't know if in the quantum electrodynamics course you heard about renormalization. I presume you heard this word in the statistical physics lectures. And in fact, there is also renormalization and the renormalization group in quantum, in statistical mechanics. And it's deeply related, in fact. So it's the same kind of physical idea which underlines the process of renormalization in quantum field theory and the process of renormalization in statistical mechanics. For reasons that I hope I will be able to explain in these first lectures, which is that there is an analogy between quantum fluctuation in quantum system and statistical or thermal fluctuation in some statistical mechanical system. So it's a mathematical analogy, but very, very deep and very important. Okay, so that's, and the third point that I will discuss in the third part of the lecture is the presentation of non-abelian gauge theory. So the extension of quantum electrodynamics to theory with much more rich symmetry, which are associated to non-abelian group, like the SU2 group or the SO3 group, okay? Which are, of course, as you know, the building blocks for all the modern theory of strong and electroweak interactions. So you need non-abelian gauge theory to do high energy physics. In addition, they also play an important role in some statistical mechanical systems, in some condensed matter quantum systems. So gauge theory are very important. Okay. So I will treat them from the point of view of functional integral and path integral, and I will study a little bit their renormalization property. Okay. So this this lecture, in fact, will be quite mathematical. I think don't be disappointed if you if you find there's less physics than in some of the other lectures. But because first, that's what I am doing best. But second, that's because you need to really understand what is the mathematical structure behind quantum field theory in order to really appreciate what it is and start to do physics. You know, some aspect of quantum theory seems very puzzling or mysterious if you stay at a superficial level and don't think at the level of quantum theory at the level of its internal mathematical structure. But once you understand the various mathematical structure which are tying together the various aspects of quantum theory, you understand what the quantum world is in a much better way, I think. Okay. So that's important to really understand what are the math of quantum theory. And non-abelian gauge theory, so the idea behind renormalization and functional integral are some very important mathematical aspects of quantum theories. And you will, in addition, need them in all the next courses of this program, like in quantum gravity, in string theory, of course, in high energy physics course, even in some advanced condensed matter course, you will need that. Okay. So. But anyway, don't hesitate to ask me questions about the physics if you try to ask what is it useful for. And in general, don't hesitate to ask me any kind of question. I'm here to answer the question. And often, good questions are better than just good answer from me. Because it's, okay, so thank you. Okay, so okay, so let me start by discussing path integrals. Okay, so bit front rear no, that's a bad idea. Okay, let us try this one.
So this one actually
yes.
Doesn't work.
Ah, this one doesn't work.
But
okay.
From here to here, so
okay.
Is that what you want?
Ah, it's a non-commutative process.
Yeah.
or quantum perhaps. Okay, so what is path integrals? So today I will discuss mainly some aspects of path integrals for non-relativistic quantum systems. And you have been already been introduced to that in the lecture by on quantum theory. So I will rely on what you, I think you have been doing, and but discuss some more advanced and aspects that will be useful when we shall study quantum fields instead of just a quantum simple quantum particle system. Okay. So you have seen that in path integrals, if you have a particle, one particle with mass m, so it's non-relativistic in general. It lives in an external potential, internal potential. Then we know that at the classical theory, equation of motion may be derived from an action principle. And the action for the field. So imagine that you have a particle. This is time. This is the position of the particle, position. And you are interested in finding what is the trajectory of a particle, the classical trajectory in the external potential. Now it seems, namely, subject to the equation of motion equal minus v prime of q. This is a Newton equation of motion. And you know that it derives from an action. So the action is that to any trajectory, q of s, let us, s is time, let us say, I want to go from 0 to time t, you associate an action s of q, which is the integral from 0 to t of ds, 1 half of mq dot square minus v of q. Okay, so this is the classical action. This is the action, and you know that the classical trajectory is a stationary point. So it means that if you make a variation q into q plus delta q of the classical, so this is q, and this is q plus delta q. Then the variation of the action to first approximation is zero. So this is okay. Now you know that if you want to quantize the theory, you. Well, okay. So here, maybe front. So, if you want to quantize the theory, of course, now the Hamiltonian of the theory is p squared over 2m plus v of q. This is a quantum Hamiltonian. And you are interested in computing what are called the probability amplitudes, the probability amplitudes. If you start from a point, let us say this one, to an initial point, q1 at time t1, and you want to go to a point q2 at time t2. So this is the amplitude is given by the scalar product of those two states in the Heisenberg representation. This is an Heisenberg picture. Well, this corresponds, of course, in the standard Schrödinger picture to exponential minus 2 minus T1 over I H bar, the Hamiltonian times Q1. This is the same object in the Schrödinger. Sure, and this is, of course, the evolution operator U of T2 minus T1. It's the operator which transforms an initial state, here a state where the particle is localized at point Q1 to some other states after, at time T2. And then you take the scalar product of this final state with the state of the particle at point Q2 to evaluate this probability amplitude. And let us call this probability amplitude K. I'm not sure you can read that. Okay, so this will be by definition K of T2 of, how do you, can I note that? Sorry, this is Q of K of Q2, T2, Q1, T1. Okay. Then we know, following Feynman and Dirac, that this probability amplitude can be written as a sum over histories. So it can be written as something which is the sum over all the possible histories of the particle, such that at time T1, the particle at that point Q1 is at point Q1, and at time T2, the particle is at point Q2. So we sum over histories, and to each history, we associate a phase, and the phase is exponential over I over H bar times precisely the action of this the classical action for this non-classical trajectory. So you have to sum over all possible trajectories. They are ponderated by a phase, and once you are able to compute that, and in general, you compute this by using a time discretization. So instead of having a continuum time, you have a discrete time, and you evaluate, you start from point Q1, you end up at point Q2, and in fact, you construct the evolution of the particle by time step of its times delta t equal epsilon. And you take, so you have a time step equal epsilon, and you take the limit epsilon goes to zero, okay? So this is a classical path integral formalism that you have discussed. So now what I want to discuss first is some puzzling aspects of the theory, which is relate this problem of quantum mechanics. This is a problem of quantum mechanics. To a problem of statistical mechanics. So now I will discuss what is quantum mechanics when you are using Euclidean time. Okay. Ah. Okay. Yes. Pardon? Ah, you can see what's going on here. Is it better like that? Ah, the system is not perfect. Okay. Okay, so then I have a whole space to use. No, oh, okay, I will stay. Let us discuss now what it means to study the theory at Euclidean time. So let us go back to the evolution operator. You see, the evolution operator is an operator. We have an operator U of t, which is defined as the exponential of t over I h bar times the Hamiltonian. It's well defined as an operator acting on the Hilbert space of states of the particle. Okay. So now let us consider the. So let us assume that, for instance, that this particle is in a potential which looks like the potential of an harmonic oscillator. So in general, I have this Hamiltonian as a spectrum. And if the potential V is like that, so if I have a potential V of Q like that with a minimum, then I have a spectrum of states E0 less than E1, less than E2, etc., that I may assume to be discrete. Although it's not very important, but for simplicity, you may consider that the Hamiltonian is discrete. And therefore, you can write this Hamiltonian as over sum of the eigenstates of the Hamiltonians times the projection on the n states times exponential of t over I h bar e n. Okay, and you see that all those phases have are pure phases, they are phases of norm one. Now, let us consider what's happening if the time is complex. So let us, you see that the time is a parameter in this expression, in the mathematical expression for this operator. So you may consider that it is complex. And then you discover that this operator u of t is bounded. So it means that all its eigenvalues are bounded if the imaginary part of time is negative. So in fact, this considered as an operator, as a function of time, is an operator which is well defined. Here I represent the real part of time. Here I represent the imaginary part of time. And this is an operator which is well defined in the lower half plane. So it's not well defined as an operator here, but it's well defined as an operator in this domain. See? Okay. And this would be very useful to define the theory. Okay. So now you may ask, what is this operator? Just consider as a mathematical operator, what's happening if t equal minus I times tau? So what happens if I am here on the negative imaginary axis? So here I have t, and here I have t is minus I tau, like that. Okay? Then this operator, u of t equal minus I tau, becomes obviously exponential of minus tau over h bar times the Hamiltonian. So it's the exponential of minus the Hamiltonian, which is an operator which has a spectrum which is bounded from above. So it's a well-defined operator. And this operator, in fact, is, so let me call it UE of tau by definition. The UE will come from Euclidean. I will explain later what it means. You see that this operator is very similar to the density matrix for this quantum system, the system of a particle here living in the potential, but not in a pure state, but in a mixed state at some temperature T, finite, so positive, non-zero. Because we know that when you have this particle which lives in the potential, if it's in equilibrium with a thermostat, so a big system, and so that it is at an effective temperature T, we know that the density matrix, rho T, is given by 1 over z times exponential of minus beta h, with beta equal 1 over the Boltzmann constant times the temperature. And z is a normalization factor, which is just a trace of exponential of minus beta h. It's called the partition function. Okay? If anyone has not already heard about what is a density matrix, please tell me. But you know. And the density matrix is just a way to compute the probabilities of the different pure quantum states which describes this mixed state. Okay, the density matrix has been invented by John von Neumann and by Landau in the 30s. Yes?
So what is the temperature T? How is it related to?
Okay, so I just said that this has a mathematical sense. This is a mathematical. Here we have an exponential of minus something times the Hamiltonian of the system. Just it's a mathematical operation. And here I have a density matrix which has the same form. So you see that there is just a mathematical analogy, which is that, but it is very important, which is that beta, which is 1 over kb times temperature, is very is similar to tau over h bar. And that's a very simple, at the moment, purely formal relation that I want you to keep in mind because it's a very, very important relation. Okay? So it means that if you know the evolution of a quantum system for real time, and if you make so time to be a complex parameter and go to imaginary time with a purely imaginary negative with time with an imaginary with a negative imaginary part, then you recover the density matrix of the same system at finite temperature, and there is a relation between tau. So why do I call this Euclidean time? So this parameter tau, I will call it Euclidean time. And why do I do that? That's simply for a simple reason that at the moment, I'm doing quantum mechanics. But for a moment, think a little bit that we are in a, this is just the time of a relativistic system. So we know that in relativity, the element of space is minus dt squared plus dx squared. So I set c equal 1 in a relativistic system, and I am using a signature of space-time for the Minkowski metric, which is minus, plus, 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 for instance. So it's different from what you have been using, for instance, in the, I think, in the quantum theory one course, but it's convenient. It's just a choice of notation of what you called, what is the metric of space-time, what is the Minkowski metric, okay? And so you see that this is a element of a distance in Minkowski space-time. Minkowski. Space-time. Now, make this formal transformation. So start from a real time and go to imaginary part by this kind of rotation in the complex time plane. And you get that dA squared is then plus d tau squared plus dx squared. So here you get the metric, which is a metric of Euclidean space. Okay, and tau is just one space coordinate. So we have an Euclidean vector in Euclidean space whose first coordinate is tau, and the next coordinates are the coordinates of the whole time we had. So we know that this operation transforms Minkowski space-time into Euclidean space-time. See? So this kind of rotation is called the Vick rotation. This transformation. And you see it transform if you are doing a relativistic, studying a relativistic system. transform a system that you are studying in Minkowski spacetime into another system you are studying in Euclidean spacetime. It sounds just a mathematical trick, but in fact, there is some deep physical aspect of that related to that. So keep this mathematical analogy in mind. Okay. So now I come back to the system where I'm doing quantum mechanics. I only have time, and space is not treated as a coordinate of space-time, but it's just considered as some of the dynamical degrees of freedom of my non-relativistic particle Q. Okay, so in non-relativistic quantum mechanics, time and space are on different footing. So let us go back to that. And the question is, can you compute the matrix element of this density matrix operator, or this Euclidean time evolution operator? Can we compute them by a path integral? Is there a path integral? For the matrix element Q2 UE of tau Q1. And the answer is yes. You can repeat all the operation we did, which have been done to define a path integral formulation in ordinary quantum mechanics. But simply, you have to replace time by Euclidean time. You have to replace the time step by time step in these Euclidean variables. You replace the evolution operator U of delta t by evolution operator of U of evolution of delta tau. You repeat all the manipulation you have been doing. I'm sorry, you can. Okay, I will then I will need front. Is there a way to have the front? Let me do that. Yeah, better. Okay, you can repeat all the operation, and what you will end up is exactly the same kind of formula, but simply where you have transformed the time into minus I times some imaginary time. So in fact, it's not very difficult to check that what you get is that this object that I can call this object will be equal to given by a path integral formulation. But now I integrate over passes over Euclidean time that I call sigma, and instead of having a factor minus exponential of I, I over h bar s of q, you simply have to make this operation and to check what's happening to the action when you replace time by an imaginary time. And what you get is that the exponential of a phase is replaced by exponential of minus some factor with SE of Q, now given by the integral from 0 to tau of d of sigma. So you integrate over histories in Euclidean time, and you get m over 2, the derivative with respect to sigma squared of the position. But then there is a change of signs, and you get v of q of sigma. So you see, there are two. You can write this matrix element for the evolution operator at Euclidean time as a path integral, but it's a path integral in Euclidean time. So in fact, you start from which at q of 0 equal q1 and at q of tau equal q2. So you have the same kind of initial and final boundary condition. But first, you have now an Euclidean action where there is a kinetic term which is the same than for the relativist, for the quantum particle. Where is that S here? But then you have a plus V of Q instead of minus V of Q. So that's the important. The first difference is this. Where am I? I got some. So let me insist on what the difference are. No. There are two differences. The first difference is first this sign, this plus sign. And the most important difference here is that there is a minus 1 over h bar instead of a I over h bar. So this means that this is really a probability distribution. So you are summing over paths, but there are no interference between the paths. You have just summing paths, summing histories in Euclidean time with different probability weights. You see? Okay. Yes? Yes. If you have calculated this quantity using this Euclidean action, then of course you get a function which is a function of this parameter tau. And what you discover, so you have something which is defined in terms of tau in this half plane, or if you prefer, let us use this one in terms of the tau parameter. You see, here is the real part of tau, and here is the imaginary part of tau. Okay. Then you are somewhere here. We are in the place where the real part of tau is positive. So this operator as a function of tau is well defined in the right half plane. And you can make a weak rotation on the other time to go from Euclidean time to Minkowski spacetime. You see? Yes?
So, time and then varying Minkowski goes from minus infinity to plus.
Yes.
Whereas when we do a big rotation, then we are constrained to go from zero to plus infinity.
Yes, that's something very important. And that's related to the fact that you see there is an analogy which is this Euclidean time and the inverse of the temperature. And you know that when you are doing equilibrium statistical mechanics, temperature can only be a finite number. Right. There are some systems where you can define negative temperature, but there are metastable systems which are not really at equilibrium. So the fact that tau has to be positive here is related to the fact that, in fact, we are doing something which is related to the description of a quantum system at a finite temperature, and the temperature has to be positive.
But the quantum system would have been valid for positive and negative time, right?
Pardon?
So we're going to transform over to Euclidean time and transform back.
Yes.
But will there be any problems with negative time?
No, because if you want to go to negative time, you just rotate in that direction.
Oh, okay.
You know that it's analytic in this whole domain. So if you want to go to positive time, you go there. If you want to go to negative time, you go there.
Okay.
So that's fine. You get, of course, then for negative time, you get the hermetic conjugate of the evolution operator for negative time, because you know that u of minus t is equal to u of t dagger. But this is true only for real time. Okay. Of course, there is no inconsistency with the standard quantum mechanics you have learned.
Okay.
Okay, so now, so we have seen that we can define the matrix element of the evolution operator at Euclidean time through a Euclidean path integral formalism, where the phases are replaced by Boltzmann's weight. See, like that. Now, there is one last
question.
Yes?
In the definition of action, why didn't you change the sign of the first term? Because when you change t2 minus I tau, then q dot v would change to minus.
Well, you just have to be a little bit careful. You see, I will do the calculation explicitly. So remember, we started from a factor which is there is an I times s of q in real time. So this is I times integral over ds from 0 to t of m over 2 dq over ds squared minus v of q. Now make the change of variables s equal minus I sigma. And t for the endpoint, t is minus I tau. Then what does this become? This becomes I times integral from 0 to tau. Ds becomes minus I d sigma. When you take the derivative with respect to s, you get a 1 over minus I, so you get m over 2 times I dq over d sigma squared minus v of q. You see? So this I and this I becomes a plus, so it gets integral from 0 to tau d sigma. Then I get a minus m over 2 dq over d sigma squared minus v of q. And you see that this is precisely minus the Euclidean action I wrote there. So you just have to do the calculation and be a little bit careful about where the I are, okay? Okay, so now one last thing I want to explain. So I have to put this font in the middle. Working. So we have computed the matrix element of the evolution operator. Now we'll be interested into what is the partition function z, which is the trace of ue of tau, with our definition, with our analogy. You see? So what is the trace? The trace is just the integral over all the matrix elements of the diagonal matrix element in position space of ue of tau. That's the definition of the trace. See? So we are summing over all the matrix elements of the evolution operator at Euclidean time, where you start from a given point, you end up at the same point, and you integrate over all the points. So this is exactly like that, except that this initial and final boundary condition are just replaced by the fact that they are the same, but with no specification of the same. So you see that this is just a path integral over Euclidean spacetime of expansion with the same factor proportional to the exponential of minus 1 over h bar se of q. And now the specification is just that you have periodic means that q of 0 is equal to q of tau. So tau, you see, in this formulation, tau becomes the period of Euclidean time. See? So you must keep, you must have this picture. If you are interested in doing quantum mechanics at finite temperature, you have this relation between the period tau of the path integral in Euclidean time and the temperature of the system. But when you are computing expectation value of observable, you are, in particular the partition function, you have to integrate over all the parts with periodic boundary conditions. So you must have this in picture that, in fact, when you are doing finite temperature quantum mechanics, well, I had something, but perhaps I will just draw the picture. It will be better. You know, we start from time. We have this real time. We have this imaginary time. But in fact, imaginary time, you have to view it as something which is periodic. So view that, in fact, that your space-time, your time is a cylinder. You see? This is tau. This is real time, physical time. So you see the complex time. So when you are doing quantum mechanics at finite temperature is mathematically equivalent to considering a complex time on a cylinder, which is infinite in the real time direction, but in the Euclidean time direction, it's periodic on a cylinder with Euclidean period. So related by this formula, so it's simply h bar over kb times the temperature t of the quantum system. See? And it's something which is, in fact, it's a mathematical way of thinking about quantum mechanics at temperature, at finite temperature, which is, in fact, very, very useful. And we shall need that later on. Okay? So, now I think I've almost finished my discussion of what it means to do path integral and quantum mechanics at Euclidean time. So, you see, it's a mathematical trick to represent quantity related to when the physical observable when you are your quantum system at equilibrium to a path integral in Euclidean time. Yes?
So what's about the limits? I mean, for t goes to infinity, we have something like h bar goes to zero. That's like classical, but...
No, what you have... Yes, that's a very good point that I wanted to explain a little bit later, but
okay.
I can explain... Okay, it's really that, in fact, when tau goes to infinity, the temperature goes to zero.
Okay, and what does this mean?
It means, I will explain that a bit later, it means that in fact you are projecting on the ground state. Because you know, when you have a quantum system at zero temperature, it means that the only state which has a probability one is the ground state. Because remember, the partition function tells you that the probability to be an eigenstate of energy En is exponential tau over h bar En. So I will come back to that in 10 minutes. Okay. Oh, perhaps I can explain that later. I think it's a bit correlated to what I would say. Yeah, okay, so let me explain that a little bit more. Okay. So now I will explain what. So up to now I have considering the partition function. Okay, so this is just the partition function. And its relation with the evolution operator. But of course, you are interested in expectation of operator, namely observables. for your theory. So let us, for instance, go back to your quantum system, and you are considering some observable A. It may be the position, the squared of the position, etc. Some function of the position, f of q, let us say. Or let us consider a function A of q, some function of the position. And you are interested in, and you may consider other operators, another function b, which is a function b of q. And we shall be interested in various objects. You might be interested in computing the expectation value of A in the thermal state with temperature beta equal 1 over kVT. Okay? So the rule of quantum mechanics, so this is just the expectation value. You have your system in the temperature T, so you make an experiment, you measure A, and you measure A again on another sample, etc. You make not repeated measurement of A on the same system, because then you have the projection postulates, which tell you that you have modified the system, but you have copies of the system at the same temperature, and you make one measurement on each system, and then you take the expectation value of that, you get a number. You know from the rule of quantum mechanics that this is just the trace of the density matrix times A. Okay. So now, well, rho is a density matrix. So rho is 1 over z times ue of tau, with tau, as always, given by the fundamental relation like that. Okay. Now, what is this trace? You can write this trace in not. Well, assume, for instance, that A is a simple function of Q. So you can write this as integral of Q, rho A, Q. So you estimate the trace as a sum over intermediate states with the eigenstate of the position. So if, for instance, here I use a simple case that A is a function of Q, so that you can diagonalize A in the function of Q. So you can rewrite this as integral over dQ, Q rho Q times the function A of Q. Remember, A is an operator. A and B are functions. Okay? And so now, we know that we have a path integral formulation for that. It's just the integral over all position with periodic boundary condition. Okay? So we can rewrite this simply as, so we have a denominator which is 1 over z, which is an integral over all the position of all the paths of exponential minus 1 over h bar se of q with tau. And here I have exactly the same thing, except that if at some initial time, tau equals 0, the particle is at a position q, then I ponderate it by the function A of q of sigma equals 0. Okay? So this object, A of beta, is just given by a ratio of two path integrals. So on the denominator, I have a path integral where I am summing over in Euclidean time sigma over all the paths which end up at the same position. And on the numerator, I have a similar path integral. Okay, so I have a, so I sum, of course, it's a different sum, not on the same position. position. So I'm summing over path integral. And at time sigma equals 0, I compute what is the position. I insert A of Q of sigma. You see? So you see that this quantum, this is a quantum expectation value for an operator in the quantum theory at finite temperature. It's given by a probability. So at the right, on the left-hand side is the quantum expectation value. And on the right-hand side, we just have a standard expectation value for a probability distribution. You see? Yes? Pardon?
Why do you take that sigma equals 0?
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
A of Q and sigma equals 0? Why?
Sigma equals 0.
Yeah?
Why? Because I can choose. I can choose any point since it's invariant by time. I will go. I will describe later. I still have 10 minutes. Or we started a bit later. Quarter 15. Okay. Then. So the point is the fact is that this quantity it's not important if you measure it here or here because you average and at the. At the average and the end is independent on this expectation value is independent on the point where you measure this point. See? But you raise a very good point because things become slightly more complicated. So this is this is rear, so I would like to have rear. Yes? So, to finish this lecture, I don't think I will have time to discuss more. I will consider now two operator expectation values. So my question is, now assume that, for instance, that we are not computing a single expectation value, but I will be computing the expectation value of A of sigma 1, B of sigma 2 in this quantum, in this thermal state. And so what does it mean? For the moment, I take it that it is defined by one over z, which is the partition function, which is always the same, times a path integral where minus one over h bar s of q a of q of sigma 1 B of Q of sigma 2. You see? And so I'm computing this expectation value of this product of those two quantities. And I am asking in the path integral formulation. And my question is, does it correspond to some expectation value of some product of operator in the quantum theory? This is the quantum theory. And this is the path integral formulation. Okay? And of course, then what you have to do, so remember this picture. We have here a picture where you have Euclidean time. We start from time 0. We end up at time. So we integrate over all possible paths with just the constraint that they end up at the same point they started from. And at sigma 1, I compute A of sigma 1. And at sigma 2, I compute B of sigma 2. Okay? But now you can decompose this into, you can decompose this by saying that this is the evolution operator for time sigma 1. Here you have an evolution operator from time sigma 1 to time sigma 2, so during the time sigma 2 minus sigma 1. And here you propagate from time tau minus sigma 2. But here I have not specified whether sigma 1 is smaller than sigma 2 or sigma 2 is smaller than sigma 1. So this picture is valid if sigma 1 is less than sigma 2, of course. See? Because you cannot go. Remember, the evolution operator at Euclidean time are only defined for real positive time, so you cannot go backward. The evolution operator is not defined. But, okay, so it's just by definition, this corresponds to this one. Okay, you see? Okay. So this, in fact, corresponds to computing the trace of rho of the evolution operator u e of sigma 1, the operator A, the evolution operator UE of sigma 2 minus sigma 1, the operator B. I'm sorry, I'm going in the other way. The operator, when you apply this, you multiply this operator by A times this operator times B. So in fact, this is UE of sigma 1 A UE of sigma 2 minus sigma 1, B, UE of tau minus sigma 2. Okay? So this path integral represents the trace of this operator. But by using the cyclicity of the trace, I can't write UE of tau, UE of sigma 1, I could put it here, and I get that this is just the trace of UE of tau minus sigma 2 minus sigma 1, B, UE of tau minus sigma 1, sigma 2 minus sigma 1 times A. So this path integral corresponds to this matrix element, this expectation value. So this is a trace of A times an evolution operator at Euclidean time for a duration sigma 2 minus sigma 1 times B times the evolution operator during the remaining time before you end up. So it corresponds to this picture. Let us remember we had real time. Here I have Euclidean time. What I am doing is that I start at time zero in Euclidean time. At time sigma one, I insert an operator A. At time sigma two, I insert an operator D, and then I come back to my first point. So this describes this kind of expectation value, okay? And now I can make two important remarks. The first important, and remember, this corresponds to this object, you see. And similarly, this is this picture. But the things that we have computed before, A beta, correspond to the same thing when you insert only one operator A and not two operators. And you can generalize that to many, many operators. Okay? So now I will end up with two very important remarks. Two important points. The first point is the answer to your question. What's happening? What is happening? When tau goes to infinity. So instead of taking a cylinder with a finite diameter, I'm taking the cylinder to be larger and larger and larger so that at the end it becomes like the complex plane. Okay? We have seen from the basic relation that letting T goes to infinity amounts to have the temperature goes to zero. Okay? But let us think, for instance, to this A beta. Let us consider just one operator. A of the expectation value of A of beta. Okay? Remember, this was defined by your Poisson integral, but it also corresponds to the trace of rho A, rho beta A. So this is what is, and remember the expression we had for rho beta. So this is 1 over, so remember rho of beta is 1 over z times exponential minus beta h. So it can be written as 1 over z times sum over n of the projector on the state n states in the spectrum times exponential minus beta e n. And z is similarly, simply, so this is an operator, and simply z is a trace of this operator, so it's sum over n of exponential minus beta e n. Okay? With beta equal 1 over kbt equal tau over h bar. So you see that you can write this as sum over n of e minus beta e n times the matrix element of the operator A between sandwiched between two energy eigenstates of your system divided by the normalization factor sum over n of exponential minus beta e n. You see? So now, what's happening when tau goes to infinity? It's equivalent to have beta goes to infinity, idest, the temperature goes to zero. And if beta goes to infinity, what is the largest term here? The largest term is the term with the smallest energy. So in this limit, this becomes simply E minus beta E naught, the matrix element of A between the lowest energy states, divided by here the same thing, exponential minus beta E zero. So this becomes the element, the expectation value of the operator A in the ground state. So this becomes expectation value of A in the pure ground state of the system. So you see, tau goes to infinity amounts to projecting on the ground state, or what is called the vacuum of the theory. You see? Okay, and finally, one last important point, and I will, but I will discuss that, I think, a bit more last time. I want to have this is the front, so let me have the front here.
Yes, it's working.
Okay, so to hand up my discussion, now I will. The second point is what's happening if I'm considering a two-point correlation function, I'm considering a two operator expectation value, like the one I have been computing here. A of sigma 1, B of sigma 2, the states beta, assuming that sigma 1 is smaller than sigma 2. What's happening if I go from Euclidean time to real time? So namely, remember, I have here, I have my cylinder which represents complex time, and I'm interested in what's happening if I make a Vic rotation on the other way and I go from sigma 1 to T1 and sigma 2 to T2. You see? So I write sigma 1 equal I T1 I T2. And let me consider for simplicity that I have also taken the limit that I've considered before, the limit where tau goes to infinity, so namely, which means that I am projecting on the ground state of the system. Okay? So then you see what I am considering is that now I can view this system, and the best is to do it as a picture. I have my Euclidean time. This is my cylinder, you see. And here I start from A, B. I integrated something like that in my path integral. And now I go back from here to here and here. So you see that the contour of integration in time, instead of being a cylinder, is deformed and becomes something like that. I go from 0 to T1. From T1, I go to T2. Then I go back. And then I project on the vacuum. So what is this? Doing that is having an evolution operator at real time during time T1. Then I apply the operator A. Then my evolution operator lets the system evolve from time T1 to time T2. Then I applied the operator B. Then I go back in time, so which means that I am applying the evolution operator U of minus T2. You see? Because I'm going that way. And then I make this integration, and for large tau, it amounts to projecting on the vacuum. So here is the matrix element of operator I am computing. If I start from this operator at bico beta equal infinity and make the Vic rotation to go from Euclidean time to real time. In fact, what I am computing by that kind of path integral formulation is the matrix element of this product of operator sandwiched between U. But remember, this is, you can rewrite the evolution operator here as U of minus T2, the operator B times U of T2, U of minus T1, A, U of T1, 0. Because remember, the evolution operator or difference of time is this U of T2 times U of minus T1. Remember, the evolution of evolution in time is additive in time. Okay. And this is just the operator B of T2 in the Heisenberg picture, while this is just the operator A of T1 in the Heisenberg picture. So in fact, what we are computing is just the matrix element between the vacuum of the systems of the products of two operator applied at different time t2 and t1. So it's a product of operator at different time in the Heisenberg picture. Okay? But this is true if sigma 1 is less than sigma 2. Therefore, if I make this weak rotation, this is true if t2 is larger than t1. And you can check easily that if t1 is larger than t2, then you can interchange the role of A and B. And what you get by the same calculation is not the same object. It's the vacuum expectation value of the product of the operator B of t2 times the operator A of t1. Okay. So you see that this expectation value at Euclidean time that you can compute by path integral formulation, in fact, when you go back to real time, gives you the products of two operators at different times, sandwiched between the vacuum state of the system. But if T2 is larger than T1, first you measure A1, then you take B2, B of T2. And if T1 is larger than T2, first you apply B to the vacuum, then you apply A to the resisting state, you see. So you see that this definition depends on the ordering of times, okay? And this, by definition, is a very important object that you probably have already met in the quantum field theory course, and otherwise we will meet it, is simply defined as the matrix element of the time ordered product of two operators. So I remember, I have two operators, A at time t1 and B at time t2, defined by this products of evolution operator times A times the anti-evolution operator, to go back to the initial time. And I define what is called the time order product of the two operators A of T1 and B of T2 at different time, which I know capital T of A of T1 times B of T2 as A times B if T1 is smaller than T2, because I first apply A to the vacuum state, then I apply B. And if T1 is larger than T2, first I apply B because the time associated to B is smaller, and then I apply B. So by definition, I get what is called the time order product of those two operators. And you see that the path integral method to compute expectation value of operator by those probabilistic methods. So we sum over path integral in Euclidean time and we compute expectation value in a probabilistic sense of observable A of Q and B of Q. When you go back to real time, you recover just the time order product of the corresponding operators. Yes? Yes. You want me to explain more?
Yeah. I didn't catch why you get that contour.
Because you can do this manipulation. It's a way just to view a manipulation on operator depending on time. So you can start from this. Start from this representation of this expectation value of operator in terms of evolution operator. You see? So now I can rewrite this. I can decompose this U of tau minus sigma 2 minus sigma 1 as So I have a trace here. I have UE of tau. So this is a product, this is an evolution operator at Euclidean time of a sum over let me do that a little bit more careful. I reply to your question and then I stop. Is that okay?
Sure.
So then do this transformation here. I change sigma 2 into I T 2 and sigma 1 into I sigma 1. So I get here. I will rewrite it that way. So I start from this. And I rewrite this as a trace of UE of I T1. A. UE of I T2 minus T1. That's fine because T1 is positive. T2 minus T1 is positive. Then I have B. And then I have UE of tau minus I T2 minus T1. Okay? So now I can revise this as UE of tau times UE of minus I T2 minus T1, and that's fine because this is imaginary. So U of something imaginary is what we find for positive and negative imaginary Euclidean time. Then I have B, then I have UE of I T2 UE, and I can do that, minus T1. Oh, T1 has disappeared, I'm sorry. I have T2 here, so I just have T2, minus I T2. So I put again I T1 here. A, UE of I T1, okay? But this is precisely UE of I T1 is U of T1, by definition. It's the ordinary evolution of operator at real time of T1. This is UE of minus T1. This is U of minus T1. This is U of T2, B. This is U of minus T2. And this is still UE of tau. So you see, in this manipulation, I have transformed the part of the evolution operator which contains real time into real time evolution operator. And this is still an evolution operator at imaginary time, a density matrix. So now, decompose that in terms of that. This evolution operator U of T1 means that I evolve from 0 to T1. Then I apply A. Then I evolve from T1 to 0, but then back from 0 to T2. So this means I evolve from T1 to T2. Then I apply B. Then I evolve from T2 to 0. So I go back in time. And then it remains this imaginary time evolution operator, which is represented by this evolution, which is a density matrix. So you see, you can either be careful and think, write everything in terms of evolution operator, decompose, make the big rotation, or you can, if you are a bit used, use this idea of just making deformation in the integration contour in time for your evolution process. So it's just a way to manipulate in a quicker way this. But you get the same results if you do it carefully in that way, or if you have this picture in terms of real and imaginary time contour integral. Okay. And at the end, you always end up with this picture.
You probably stop for the
yes.
Next lecture.
Okay, so thank you.